Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fran, why is it so hard to be out and out five-star recommendable about Tears of the Kingdom?
It's because, Scott Tilford, unlike Breath of the Wild, it's very much just a sequel, isn't
Breath of the Mild.
I'm not doing that.
That's just what I saw doing the rounds.
Is that really?
5-6 years ago.
Oh my God, Breath of the Mild. This kind of is, and that's like such a strange thing to say, because I think we both had a really good time
with Tears of the Kingdom.
But taken in totality, which is what we're going to do today, there are a lot of negatives, I think, to jump into. And just full disclaimer, this is going to be a very negative podcast in parts, though
we are going
to talk about stuff that we love, because there is stuff, spoiler stuff, that I absolutely adore about this game that I'm so excited to finally talk about. But there's an equal amount where I'm either not sure on it or my perception is a little bit coloured because I love Breath of the Wild so much and the context in which that game came out.
It's the most fascinating game to talk about, because I prefer Breath of the Wild overall. That game knocked me sideways. I absolutely loved it. Tears of the Kingdom, I maintain, like I said in the review, is a 4.5 star game with 5-star moments in it. And there are a lot of 5-star moments and ideas, concepts in general in there. It just doesn't keep the needle pinned. And I think the bits when it doesn't necessarily fall down, it's just that it doesn't fully stand up the whole way through. It's a weird, weird game. And the more distance we've got since launch and the more people have shared clips from it, the more that I'm seeing people not finishing it. Like, I see people moving on from it. I see people only sharing footage from the opening field that people are in. I'm not seeing anybody getting through the temples. I'm not seeing anybody talk about many of the things that happen towards the end of the story. This is a full-on spoiler cast, which it will be labeled as such. But things like the Master Sword location, that was one of the only things I've seen someone mention. But not the ending, not like the fight with Ganon. Like, just, it feels like it's such a mod happy kind of game where it's like, look at this crazy thing that I built, that it's almost like a, like when Minecraft, this, I'm going back to when Minecraft was like doing the rounds across, obviously 2009 came out, and then it was that massive burst of look at these creations across like 2010 through about 2013, 2014-ish. That guy that made that calculator just work in Minecraft, or someone who rebuilt the entirety of Lord of the Rings in Minecraft.
Right.
It feels like that, where it's like the community around this game is, look what I've built, not look what I've seen, look what I've experienced or whatever. I'm not seeing that much of it apart from just the crafting side of it. And I think that is one of the 5-star parts of it.
Yeah.
But I do find that, like, when I reflect on my time on it, I don't know, there's a way they implemented it across the story that I feel it could have been more meaningful, you could have fundamentally needed to build some of these things to get through these locations.
Absolutely, and I mean, you referred to it there as a weird game, and I would agree. I think it's a testament to its ambition that it absolutely swings for the fences and does a whole bunch of stuff. But like you said, while some of those aspects might not necessarily fall down, some are certainly better than others, and it's cool that we have a game as big as this, as sprawling as this, that we can really pick apart. Like, we're going to talk about so much today.
Yes.
And that barely scratches the surface of everything going on within this game. But you are right in terms of the building. And for me personally, that's why I prefer Breath of the Wild, because people are showing me all of the constructs that they've made and the ways that they've navigated the world. And I love that that's in there. Mm-hmm. For my personal tastes, I don't have the creativity to fully capitalize on that mechanic. It's exactly why I don't play games like Minecraft, and that's very much a me thing, but I think it's really interesting that you made the differentiation mm-hmm. between the two games being, this is what I've built and this is what I've seen, because that was absolutely what I loved about Breath of the Wild. It was that sense of exploration. It was, what does Hyrule have to offer? What is going to be down this path if I follow it? And while obviously Tears of the Kingdom's Hyrule and the skies and the depths have so much to find, that sense of discovery isn't quite there for me, because I have seen almost everything that it has to offer already in a previous game. And like I said, that still makes the game good, but it doesn't make it as, oh my God, this is a 10 out of 10 experience. I'm going to remember this forever in the same way that Breath of the Wild was.
That was honestly why I opened the review on just clarifying just how much they've carried over. But I never, and I still am not over how much this is the same game. Like, yes, the crafting systems are brilliant, and they're it's a sequel, whatever. You can get all itemized and granular about it, but it just felt the same. Like, it was just the same sound effects, the same animations, the same progression overall, just the same overall vibe. Like, I mean, it was just more of that thing. And there was something about that where, like, it was like, when you really, if you do start to get granular about what have they literally added, well, it's the crafting system, it's the mod stuff. But because, to me, they don't make it that you need to use those systems to get through the temples or get through, you know, like slaying a certain beast that can only be found if you make a flying machine or something like that. Like, they don't go anywhere near that stuff, which I would say, like, is a bit of a, I mean, I'm always all about criticizing what were they going for, what did they nail? So maybe they never wanted to make it that specific. But I do think that you were saying, like, you know, you feel like, oh, I don't have the mind for, like, those more complex contraptions. Well, the game could have taught you that. Like, in a way, like, they could have made something that teaches you. They do it at the beginning, like, where they go, here's a couple of hooks and a platform and, like, a zip line that goes down. You probably need to make a platform that'll hook around that thing and get somewhere. To me, they never really do that again. Like, they don't fully flesh that out.
I think properly. This is where we'll start to diverge a little bit, because I cut the game so much slack in this regard because of what you just mentioned there. Like, I don't think I have the brain power to construct all of these massively intricate constructs, but the game still taught me way more than I ever thought it would, you know, over the first 10 or 20 hours. You know, like you said, initially I wondered whether I would bounce off the fuse mechanic entirely and maybe it just wouldn't be my thing, but it did such a great job onboarding me and teaching the rules and giving me a few things that I could build to allow me to get around puzzles, and it did expand my brain almost way more than I expected it to, and I was really appreciative of that. But I'm pleased that it didn't require me to be a master of it to get over certain puzzles or to complete certain combat encounters, because I would have found that not fun. To me, it actually struck a pretty perfect balance towards the end of encouraging you to indulge in those mechanics but not relying on you having a mastery over them. Like, one of my favorite parts of the game is the Sky Islands.
Yes,
like,
so same. Best part by far.
So optional, some of them, but every single time I went to a new area, I jumped up the tower, launched into the sky, and found the closest Sky Island that I could, because to navigate those areas, you have to use the building mechanics. You have to use the fuse mechanics, and I navigated all of those in a different way, using different items, but I kind of had the same basic tool set. I wanted to go high in the sky so I could then, you know, paraglide down, or I wanted to use a rocket to launch me to the other side of a canyon or whatever. And I found that exciting because I could improvise my way around that stuff. And it felt fresh, certainly something I didn't do in Breath of the Wild. But like I keep saying, you know, it didn't block me out, or it didn't, you know, give me a difficulty spike when I wouldn't have known how to create one specific thing to complete a specific quest. That stuff I actually disagree with you on, because I think it would have locked out more people than it would have brought
maybe.
In. Perhaps.
I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, mine's not like an overall... I just wish there were more instances like the Sky Islands, because like at the beginning of the game, like I said, you have that hook thing and then you're in the Sky Islands, and that's by far, to me, the best part of the game. It's the most differentiable part of the game from Breath of the Wild. And when you fall down to Hyrule, there's something to me that was just something that was a bit, oh, Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to be back up there. I want to be doing all that stuff and building flying machines and building all these contraptions and everything, because that is where you do need to use them. But like in terms of like authored scenarios where you need to think your way through puzzles, I ended up just, obviously you end up using the crafting materials and everything anyway, and those are the five-star moments when things come together, and I can't believe that worked and whatever. That's the best parts about it. I just wish, considering how much Hyrule from Breath of the Wild is in here, I wish it was more in there as well. But we talk about specific stuff, and I think it, like we'll just kind of go back and forward on things. Talk about characters, lore, story stuff.
Okay.
Because my favorite thing in here is the depiction, is everything that Zelda does, and is the Master Sword's location. That is like my moment, for now, is like my moment of the year.
Right.
Like realizing that she was there all along, that she did Draconify, that the Master Sword is in her head, and that you need to find a way up there to retrieve it. That did, in the moment, bring everything together. Like the Sky Islands, how much I was comfortable being in the sky at that point, and like building a flying machine and flying up in the sky and then skydiving onto her head and then like retrieving it. And also at that point, I'd done enough random stuff in the world to have enough hearts to pull it out. I don't know how many you have to have, but I had enough.
Yeah.
And that just felt like a whole all-encompassing thing. And the music in that moment is incredible. And then when you go back to, you know, gameplay and everything, after you find out the full story, what's happening with her, and she just sort of like flies off into the distance, and you're left with that, just the realization of the sacrifice that she's made. I thought that was like just so perfect.
It's a great scene. It's an amazing scene. And I need to clarify, that the story in this game and other Zelda games are not why I play.
It's never why anyone plays
these
them.
Titles. You know what I mean? Like, I loved Breath of the Wild. I would consider it one of my favorite games of all time. I can't remember the story of that game. I don't know.
There's very little.
The characters, I can barely remember the setup. Like, that wasn't the draw for me. Even in Skyward Sword, which I loved and was obviously way more linear, I can remember the vague structure of that plot, but I can't remember any of the characters or necessarily the setting. To me, these games are about the puzzles. They're about the exploration. They're about the sense of player agency and the game making you feel smart. That said, Tears of the Kingdom story, I was way more engaged in as a whole. I was more encouraged to find the actual tears and get that backstory. I thought some of the cutscenes were incredibly directed, really exciting, impactful, and that one with Zelda and the Master Sword. Whilst it didn't affect me the same way it affected you and so many other Zelda fans across the globe, because I've been looking at their responses and it warms my heart, I still thought it was an excellent scene, really pitch perfect. It just, it wasn't that kind of culminating thing that it was for me. Like, it was just another good scene in a game that had some other good scenes in it.
I definitely, I said this in the review, like, I hugely agree on the cinematography. I think this is the best shot Zelda ever. Like, they really actually do put time into the cutscenes in a way that no other Zelda has. Even Breath of the Wild didn't really have that many cinematic moments. Like, there's a bit in this where Ganon is fighting Rauru and the rest of the Zonai, and it's like, it's a whole like battle sequence that you hardly got any of in Breath of the Wild.
Dude, that moment where I think it might be the same sequence where he raises the Blood Moon for the first time and he transforms. That was the moment
that was
where
some Dark Souls stuff.
It was the moment where that story kind of went from something I was just doing and finding because I liked doing the glyphs in the world to, oh, I'm actually interested in what's happening right now because this is so well presented.
Yeah, one thing with that was funny is like, because we should talk about this, that you can just do things so out of order that it breaks all satisfaction, it can break satisfaction, or it breaks the potential build of what's happening. Because like a lot of that stuff, obviously the overall idea being that Zelda is trapped in the past, oh, that's what you think until you realize that she's a dragon. You don't know, you know, what's happened or where she is or whatever, and there are these various geoglyphs that they call them around the world, and when you interact with them, you get bits of story. You can do them massively out of order. There's a temple you can find that shows you the order they should be in.
Yeah.
But by the time I'd found that, I'd already done one of the clips that is at the very end, and it starts with the realization that the clone of Zelda is Ganon and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I saw that almost immediately, which kind of largely broke the build to that. And so that was like, that's a weird thing. As a design rule, overall, they don't care about curating you in a certain direction. And I think, I don't know, I do think parts of it are negative. Like, I think putting stuff like the ability for you to put a manual teleport stone thing down so you can go back to a place, that I think should be something that you get given. I just think that's massively helpful, especially in the Sky Islands. If you fall off and you're not, you just can't get back up there, like that sucks. You got to go find a tower or
right.
whatever. And it's like, it's weird because I get that the appeal is obviously in the exploration, but sometimes when you're in the middle of just solving a puzzle, you just want to try and get one of those green gems, crystals back to the place. And then it's just the physics make it fall off because you land wrong and then you just tumble to the floor. I think it's that idea of like being able to like teleport back up or something like that. One of those like foundational elements could have been cool to have. Some of the stuff, because it's all just so optional. I didn't get auto build for 70 hours.
Yeah.
So like
okay.
stuff like that, I'm like, that would have been massively helpful to have before.
You've raised a lot of good things there, Scott. I'm going to quickly go back to the stuff with the Master Sword because it kind of links with your doing stuff out of order there. Because when I got the Master Sword, I'd already seen the cutscene, of course, where Zelda, you know, she kind of promises that she's going to swallow the stone and become this dragon and kind of safeguard the Master Sword until Link's ready, you know, all the way in the future. But when I did all of the glyphs and the dragon comes around and drops the final tier that kind of confirms that and you see her transformation. The wind was kind of sucked out of it because I saw the dragon in full and I saw the Master Sword in its head and I was like, you've given me these cutscenes. Yeah, it's like literally right there. It's like, you've given me all these cutscenes. You've shown me now the Master Sword in this dragon's head flying around.
Right.
So then I had to go to this final, you know, tier to finally see the backstory. And then the dragon appeared again. And I'm like, that was just a kind of convoluted series of events. Could you not have just given me the final tier immediately and showed me that transformation and then revealed the dragon in game? Like, why did I have to see it first and then see it again and then see it again? It was just a little bit strange. And I don't know if that was unique to my playthrough or if it changes if you get the Master Sword a different way, because I know there are a few other quests that tell you where it is and what's going on with it. But
mine definitely worked as a reveal. I remember like the sort of like the haunting nature of her just being trapped in this body for like 100 years or whatever it is. That totally worked as a reveal. And you see her like flying in the background and realizing like, oh, I need to go there. And then the story things like flesh it out and whatever. But yeah, the Master Sword, I got that like pretty early. And then that, like, they don't address that in any of the dialogue. Like, I think when, because the game had a couple of day one patches and stuff. But that was one of those things that just felt broken to me because I got the Master Sword and then I went back and talked to Pura and then the dialogue was like, oh, where is Zelda? Where's the Master Sword? And Link's holding it in front of her,
right,
talking to her. And I was just like, this just feels kind of hokey. Like, it's some of it you can just kind of file it under, oh, it's a video game. You've got the item that you're not supposed to have, but it's not like it's a pre-order item or something that like is optional.
Yeah.
Like it's baked into your design that I could have the Master Sword at this point and characters weren't acknowledging it or anything. There's a bit later on where they sort of roadblock you and go, you need to have this before you can do the next mission. And if you do have those things at that point, then they start to tell you you're going to need to retrieve things. And then they go, oh, you've actually already got it.
Yeah.
But there were like lots of like, you know, initial conversations that just didn't make any sense in context for just the way I did stuff.
And that feels rare, I think, from this game, because I think in other regards, the game's really good at banking what you've done and accommodating for that. Like, there were so many other times early in the game where I had, you know, got an item for a quest that I hadn't already gotten. You know, I just picked it up while I was out exploring, and then I eventually found the quest giver, and they said, oh, you've done it. I can't believe, you know, you've preempted me in that way. And it was really good at acknowledging that stuff. So it is a shame that they didn't do that for arguably one of the biggest items in the game that you need. That's
well, because I was like, I've retrieved it. I've been through that whole set piece of like getting it off her head in midair on a dragon.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'll go back to the main characters who were looking for this, which is like Pura and Robbie and whatever. And none of them acknowledged it.
Yeah.
So I was like, ah, that's a bit flat. I guess I just wasn't supposed to go here or something.
But
it didn't like massively mar anything. It's just things that kind of come up when we talk about it holistically or we talk about it retrospectively in terms of the design of this, like this tapestry of a game that largely accounts for everything you do.
Yeah.
But then some of the more story-based things, if you mainline the geoglyphs, then you'll realize things out of order or whatever. Like things like Ganon. We talk about Ganon for a sec. Like, I think this is the best depiction of Ganon we've ever had.
Well, can we halt that for a brief second and talk about what you mentioned about the items and the auto builder?
I'm excited, Josh.
Stuff. I know. There's so many good things. I just want to jump on that before we move on, because I think it's a really important development in the game itself when you get that auto builder and suddenly it opens everything up. Because like I said at the start, as someone who isn't smart enough to think of all of these different contraptions.
I don't think it's a smart thing.
Well, I'm just not wired that way. It gave me blueprints, and then suddenly I was enjoying building so much more. I was enjoying finding the Zonai items and resources,
the charges,
so I can actually, one, you know, have enough battery to fuel those things, but two, construct them out of thin air when I needed to. So it, to me, that made everything make sense. But more importantly than that, it worked as a reward because I stumbled on that at about 30 hours in,
right,
entirely on my own. You know, I went to the tutorial area from Breath of the Wild and I found one of the goddess statues and got onto a quest with them that took me underground to find the big goddess. And on the way there, I found the temple that has the auto builder. And it felt so player driven that that reward was one of the most satisfying in the whole game and gave me probably my most memorable and enjoyable story from the entire experience. So I kind of like that they didn't give me that overt mission prompt. And you actually can get an overt mission prompt if you talk to some NPCs in Lookout Landing. Right. I figured out after the fact because it was another one of those where they were like, hey, there's this really cool item in the depths, go find it. And then they were like, you've already got it. That's so cool. But being able to find that on your own was, I found that incredible. And that's when the freedom the game gives you, for me, absolutely works and justifies itself in why when I think, okay, I see what you're trying to do. And in this instance, you absolutely nailed it.
I think that's the thing. The gamble that they're doing with just laying out all these, like I mentioned before about the teleport thing, is something that is like a found, like a, to me, is a core ability that I would argue you should have from the beginning. The gamble with spreading so many of those things around, like the auto build, like the ability to even just expand your inventory. If you don't find Hestu, like Breath of the Wild, you won't get more inventory space. And he moves around the map as well. Even the fairies and the fairy fountains, like to upgrade weapons or equipment. Like you can go there, and I went the whole game not seeing a single one of them. Like that stuff being so optional, the gamble is that when you do stumble upon it, it'll feel like you found that and you made your game better because you found it. It's just that that risk reward I thought was more pronounced towards the risk side of it in this than it was in Breath of the Wild because there are more powers in this. There's more things that you want to be playing with and you don't have the battery power. You don't have the enough Zonai charges. Like it's just that, I don't know, they get in their own way in a few, to me, in terms of some of the economy of it. Like the that thing you said about using auto build, when I finally had that and I started using it, I would just run out of the charges. And it's like, okay, go back down into the depths and just grind. Just go find some stuff. Go to some caves, grind out some bright bloom seeds. Like you'll not be able to see, so you need to be down there. You can build something with some lights, but like it was that doesn't see far enough to me as far as like the bright bloom stuff. Some of that stuff got a little bit too bogged down in its economy rather than just being as free as the rest of the game.
No, that's interesting because, you know, we've mentioned this when we were talking about our non-spoiler thoughts about Tears of the Kingdom previously, but the way I was playing that, I never encountered that scarcity of resources and the economy just kind of flowed really well because I knew that using the Zonai charges to create one of the auto building machines would cost me dearly, but I always had about 200 to 300 of them, so it was always something I could tank, and then I would have to be knowledgeable enough to build something improvised to get past the next puzzle, for instance, while I restocked what I'd used, and then use it again without fear of completely, you know, going bankrupt, for lack of a better term. So the economy actually worked in my favor in a way I don't think it necessarily did for you.
I just found it like a sort of enjoyable. Like a pointless restriction. Like just why not let me just use the auto build? Like I don't even like other than forcing you down into the depths, but you need to go down there anyway. Like especially towards the end of the game to help find Ganon or find the Yiga clan and everything. Like other than just there's a resource down there if you find some enemies, fight them in the dark and get some loot. I was like, I effing hated the deaths. So that's my side.
We'll get to the deaths at some point because I think that's our big diversion. But honestly, to me, them not just giving you unlimited resources and allowing you to auto-build whatever you want. Actually, for me anyway, it wasn't about going to the depths to replenish those resources. It was about using other contraptions and building other things because I got one auto-build thing that pretty much would have solved every main sky puzzle in the game. It was like a rocket platform that just launched you
into
the sky.
That's what I started doing towards the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I used that to beat one of the temples because I just had enough resources and could do it. But if that was infinite, I'd have used that every step of the way. Like that would be the most efficient solution to my problems. And I wouldn't have wanted to build a balloon contraption or anything like that. So the finite resources encouraged me to do other things and to approach puzzles from different angles with different contraptions and different machines because I needed to. Otherwise I would waste these rare well, rare-ish resources on incredibly expensive items when I could just use what's around me and build, you know, a more ramshackle contraption, but one that will still do the job.
That was, yeah, I mean, that was the same for me, but it was like towards the end, it was like, it was just focusing on the most efficient thing. It was like, let me put a rocket on a shield, let me block so I can fly straight up. Like, it was just, yeah, it was that kind of thing. And like, but because things were so item restricted, then like, yeah, it meant that like, well, I've got some rockets, I can just put that on, I can use fuse, I can just put that on a shield, rather than be constantly encouraged to build and build and build and build more complex stuff and whatever. It's just, I don't know, like the structure of it is the thing, because like, I think there's a whole problem this game has with rewards. I think the rewards you get either from the combat encounters or from meaningfully going off the beaten path, if you don't stumble onto one of the main things, are pretty terrible. Like, it's always just, here's a gem, here's like 10 arrows. Like, they really just don't know what to put in those chests. It's just like, it's quite arbitrary stuff that you're picking up. So like that, I think some of it kind of compounds the idea of exploration. Like, it's both, I should go to these points on the map, I should be like building all this different stuff, but at the beginning I don't have the control stick, I can't actually steer anything, and like, and I'm running out of resources, or that thing blew up anyway. And then there's a way the bottom can fall out, and it did at the beginning of the review period for me, where I was like, oh, I'm kind of just go anywhere, I can kind of just do a few different things.
Yeah.
I can't fully control the stuff that I want to, but I'm burning through resources. This isn't really a fun feeling.
Right.
Like, I want to just have fun with this stuff. And so like, it frees up, but it is so resource dependent that like, you explored enough that you had enough resources that it wasn't a problem. But I would argue that because it wasn't a problem, they should have just got rid of it.
Nah, see, to me, because it was a problem, but it just wasn't a game-breaking problem. Mm. Like, I think you might have gotten there where the bottom could fall out and you could just be completely out of resources. It was a problem that I was thinking about in terms of, you know, I can't just build anything I want because I would run out. It was always something to manage, which to me struck the balance because, yeah, it meant that I was thinking about it, but it also meant that because I was thinking about it and trying to navigate it as best as possible, I wasn't, you know, at that point allowing myself to run out. There was always an alternate solution to my issues, and it was about being aware of keeping those resources topped up. So it's like, it was just the right amount of a problem to make it worthwhile, rather than just eliminate it entirely. I would have had less fun with the game if they did what you said and just, you know, allow you to have full access to all of those abilities and
letting you build more stuff would have made it less fun for you.
No, well, yeah, like
that's
I said,
crazy
because,
to me.
Because it's the efficiency thing. If I could just build anything, like I said, you know, I would just build the most efficient thing and then solve all my problems that way, and it would become rote and it would become boring. I wouldn't have the pressure of, one, finding the ingredients to build this stuff, but two, implementing them and have it work. Like you said, everything in this game is like risk reward. And if you eliminate that risk, to me, it's less satisfying.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's the thing. And when it is satisfying, it is God tier 5-star satisfying. Yeah. It's just that their risk is that the bottom could fall out and you can get lost in the depths, or you cannot find a core ability or whatever it is. The thing is, I remember the first time when you go down to Hyrule, like I said, I had that feeling of like, oh, this is just, I was loving being in the sky. I'm not really loving being on the high. It just looks the same. I'm running the same. It feels the same. I remember coming across the first lot of the President Hudson's building materials, and you find like a bunch of planks of wood and some like boards and some wheels. And I was like, oh, the game wants me to build a car. That's awesome. And I just did. I just built a car. And then I was like, well, I can't steer it. So like, I'll put like a fan on the back of it, and I put some flame emitters on the front of it. So I like flew off in a direction. And I was like, this is great. And then like the flames like set fire to the grass in front of me. And then I just went up in flames. Now I just laughed because I felt stupid it was. But then the next time I came across one of those President Hudson materials, I didn't bother building anything because I knew how that was going to go to some degree. And I can build a cart and fly it in one direction, but I can't steer it or anything. Mm. And so it was like, and when they finally start giving you the ability to steer, even that is a finite resource. So like, you can stock up on them.
Yeah.
But again, it's just that idea of like, you can have a lot of fun to a point. Like, we're going to like, you're going to have to go somewhere else and get more of these sticks, and then you can come back.
I do think a core difference between us is that my to a point of the fun was way higher than yours. Like, the ceiling of it was way higher. Like, I could have a lot of fun before I hit that point. You know what I mean? It never felt like I only had one steering wheel and I had to use it in the most important moment.
No, I never, like, it was rare that it got like that. It's just being aware of like the purpose behind the building, the purpose behind the mod kit they've bolted onto Breath of the Wild. Like, that was the thing that I, like, all of this like hovers around. Like, what are you using this stuff for? And what's the real reason for it?
I suppose going back to what you mentioned there about, you know, building that cart and not having a steering wheel, to me that was exciting because I liked the sense of escalation that the building had. Every time I felt like I'd mastered a rudimentary machine, I would get bigger wheels, or I would get a better turning stick, or I would get bigger batteries to power it for longer. In that kind of sense of escalation and looking forward to making things that are, you know, really cool to use, but also easy to use, and you're not having to plank a horrible fan on the back of a car and then fan it to turn left and right. Like, that was satisfying in and of itself, because it felt like I was actually progressing. It felt like I was getting stronger and smarter and had more things at my disposal than in the first hour where, you know, I was building the worst things imaginable and just about getting from point A to B. Again, it's a risk, though, because, like you said, for some people, a bottom will fall out and then they won't enjoy that escalation and might just want access to that stuff right away because they have teased you with it.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I do love that build, like, ironically, whatever, the pardon the pun, is the point. Like, you're meant to get more comfortable with this stuff. And I remember at the beginning thinking, like, oh my God, I could fall off these islands at any point and just plummet to the ground, and I'm sure at some point I'll become comfortable in the sky. And when you get used to using the flying objects that you have, standing on different parts of them to arc through the sky, I was like, this is beautiful. This is like falling with style, like in Toy Story. And it's obviously an intentional ramp up. It's just that by tying a resource grind to it, you've kind of done the thing that, I guess, and this is maybe entirely subjective, it's the thing that Minecraft had. It's like, I'd love to build this nice little house, this hut. I'd love to do this thing, but I need to go over there and grind for an hour to get a specific resource that may or may not be in that cave.
Right,
to come all the way back and then try and build, oh, I need three more. I need to go back over there and get this. Like, that's why these games, Minecraft, various Teardown or whatever, have build modes to just let, No Man's Sky has one, just to let you have fun with it. And Zelda, obviously, you can argue back and forth on whether it needed a build mode or something. But it's just how much the resource side of it affects what is the most sellable aspect of it.
Totally. And I mean, I can only say my side of the experience, and that's that I never had any grind, which was great. Right. If I did have a period where I had to go grind for an hour for resources, I'd probably be entirely with you. In fact, I know I would be entirely with you, because I would think that was bad design and boring and not fun for me personally. But I can just say that thankfully I never ever had that.
It didn't define the experience. It just came into view more towards the end. But it was also tied in with the thing I said before about how the game just kind of roadblocks you at some point. Like, it's like a diamond shape. Like, it's super freeing to a point. And then the game's like, oh, but have you done this? Okay, where's Ganon? Okay, we need to go find this. And I found those like needle in a haystack moments to be like, pretty lame.
But if
you do spend enough time just exploring, you'll stumble upon them anyway. We both found the cloud shrouded temple in completely different ways. I skydived down onto it, and I think you freed it up from the ground up or something. You did like a whole set of missions on the ground. So like, that's like a whole risk reward thing as well. But there's something about a game just saying like, hey, the thing you need's out there somewhere. I'm like a computer that just malfunctions. I don't even know what to do with that information. I'm like, I need something. It's out there somewhere.
Well, I enjoyed that stuff because, I mean, I loved Breath of the Wild because it eliminated more or less the regular waypointing of missions in open world games. And Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, for me, in those moments towards the late game where it said, you know, you need to go find the fifth sage, it gave me enough information to work off, and I had seen enough of the map that I could kind of piece everything together quite quickly, so it never got to a point where I was just randomly exploring the map, not knowing which direction to go in, and kind of hoping to stumble upon that needle in a haystack. It wasn't that for me. I kind of had the framework of what I needed to do, and it was just sort of implementing that. And again, like, the games are so one to do it, kind of relied on my own brain to put it together in a way that felt satisfying when I did, you know. For instance, they tell you about like Zonar ruins towards the end of the game. That will be a big help for you. And all the way through the game, I remembered the Zonai ruins from Kakariko Village that you can't enter because Zelda, apparently, you know, fake Zelda, said no one's allowed in. So immediately when they said that, I thought, well, that's the first place I'm going to check out. And that was the solution.
Right,
so
okay.
I never had that kind of massive roadblock of getting frustrated and not being able to progress. I felt like they gave me enough threads to follow that I managed to weave it together. But that could have fallen down, especially if you're a player, and this isn't you, by the way, just a player who gets to that early and hasn't even, maybe even seen those ruins or don't having been to certain areas of the map and kind of feel like just go off.
Yeah, it was certain parts of those ruins where I thought I'd seen enough stuff there. But then it's like, yeah, that bit of the game where it's at the end of the game where it kind of just roadblocks you. It's like, okay, do you have the Master Sword? Right, cool. Okay, like, where's Ganon? Okay, he's out there somewhere. Okay, is he in the castle? Well, we've been there. Right, he's not there. He's somewhere else. Okay, cool. Like, you need to go find these other items. And it's just that whole thing of just like, it's out there somewhere. And I like, go find the other temple. There's another temple somewhere. Oh, there must be a fifth sage. Oh, okay. Like, that just felt so thrown together. It's like, right. We need to pad this out. It was like, and it's very Zelda, like, but it's also one of those things that, like, in Zelda history, people notoriously hated that when they fixed things like the Ocarina of Time Water Temple when it was back out on 3DS. They overhauled Wind Waker's ending in HD, because that game used to have you just finding 12 pieces of something in the open world. And then Nintendo were like, yeah, that was a bit much. So they made it like 8 or 5 or something. And Skyward Sword has it as well, where you're going back and forward all the time trying to get these different things. It's like, can we just sort of like have a natural endpoint rather than just a roadblock, go find a thing?
Here's where I disagree, right?
Of course he does.
Because with Skyward Sword, I absolutely agree. The roadblocking at the end of that game feels so arbitrary. Mm. And you're going back into worlds you've already been to. You're going to find 3 or 4 things. And it feels arbitrary. Mm. It feels like padding. Here, yeah, they give you vague instructions, which I can totally get why some people wouldn't like that. But I always found when you figured out where you had to go, that bit of content was satisfying and worthwhile. Some of my favorite temple is the final one you do. Mm. So that kind of roadblocking at the end at least gave me these discrete bits of content and these new gameplay scenarios that I thought were incredible. Mm. Yeah, I know you skipped it entirely, but getting rid of the storm in that Sky Island was great. Like the little puzzle that you have to do surrounding that, the area is cool. You get a nice new armor set. You talk to a few NPCs. It was just a cool mission and one that I'll remember after 70 hours of open world exploring. In the same with the final temple and the same with the final dive under Hyrule Castle. So I do agree that it is kind of roadblocking, but not in the same way as a Skyward Sword where it felt like the thing you're doing wasn't fun. At least here, I thought the content was good enough to justify it.
And I have a million other examples of when I stumbled upon something and it was beautiful. Like, again, like, those are always the 5-star moments. It's just like, you have, there's a certain like feeling of like tranquility and serenity to Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom that is like, I'm just on this journey and I'm going to come across things and it'll feel good and it'll all come together. And I felt like Breath of the Wild did a better job of managing, like, of an invisible guiding hand, whereas Tears of the Kingdom has had to make that hand very obvious towards the end and be like, actually, you've not got that, it's somewhere, go find it. Whereas, like, I found that Breath of the Wild, because they were managing less, it was just 4 points on the map and then Ganon.
Yeah.
It was a lot easier to sort of like, you know, mop the things up in between, like the Hestu stuff or whatever. But let's talk about the depths.
Yes.
Because the depths are the thing that, like, towards the end of the, because I did very little in the depths. I was like, this is a very unpleasant place to be. I can't see anywhere. The first time I went down there, I did actually really enjoy it because I had a ton of bright bloom seeds and I was just firing them out ahead of myself. I was like, oh, it's really cool that they've committed to this entire undermap thing. And I'll just kind of explore like bit by bit and see where they hit like in the darkness and they're illuminating different paths and everything. And I sort of spent a bit of time down there. I was riding around on a bone horse for a bit and I got a bunch of items and everything. And I was like, I've kind of had my fill of that. That's fine. I hate levels in the dark. I hate the one in Hollow Knight that just is in the dark. It sucks. I just can't stand it because I wanted to know where I'm going. And so it's that, I was like, I'm fine with that. So I went back to the surface and did the rest of the game.
Right.
And then at the very end, it roadblocks you and says, like, Ganon's out there somewhere, but we don't know. And obviously, he's underneath the castle. But, like, in the moment, I was like, well, I don't know. Like, it could be anywhere. And I was like, I guess he's in the depths somewhere. And obviously, the more you fight the Yiga clan members, they talk about the Demon King and, like, and working for him. And I was like, okay, if I follow this through. But then, because I hadn't done any of that depth stuff, because it's fundamentally optional until that point, it was all depth stuff. And I was just down in the darkness trying to find Yiga members and trying to find Ganon, firing out Bright Bloom seeds, running out of them, leaving to get more, coming back down and just hating it. I'm walking into another wall in the darkness again. This absolutely sucks.
My favorite stint with this game took place in the depths. And I'll tell you why. Because the depths itself, when I was just randomly exploring, similarly to how I was just randomly exploring Hyrule for a little bit, when I was just doing that, I didn't like it because I thought, well, what are the rewards versus the cost that I'm putting in? You know, the bright bloom seeds or whatever. Mm. And I wasn't getting much from it. But once I started getting missions that took me down to the depths and curated content down there, that's when it completely unlocked for me because, like I said, the mission that took me down to find the goddess got me the auto builder, which put me onto the Yiga clan, and then I was following them. And that little stint felt so fresh and so new and so curated that I couldn't help but completely love it, because it was just something new, Scott Telford. It was the sense of discovery that I got from Breath of the Wild. It was this brand new location that I didn't know how to navigate.
I agree with that.
Brought something exciting out of the darkness, a new enemy to fight, a new little encampment, a lot of resources that I needed. So it just gave me the thrill of exploration that I wasn't necessarily getting on the surface.
Yeah.
And that element initially appealed to me so much.
Because, I mean, that's the thing. I exaggerated before, but I did the rest of the game. I did. Every now and then I would drop back through one of those portals and do a little bit more, tap into one of those trees. And then when you realize that they all match up with the shrines on the surface, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And then you could start making map markers on the surface and then realizing, oh, if I just follow that underground, I'll get to something. Like, it was fine. It was just one of those things where it was just after hours and hours and hours and hours of it, I was just like, oh my God, can we turn the light on?
I am sick
of this. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where like it is rewarding and it's just enjoyable to a point. But I just think that like it was just the way that I played it. It was just like the order of it. If you were doing enough of the depths the entire time, then you wouldn't have the roadblock where you just need to go find someone, because you would have already found the Yiga stuff.
Yeah.
The irony is as well, like that down in the depths, you do need to rely on the mechs a lot more, the building stuff a lot more. Because you're strapping torches to stuff, or maybe you're making a sled with some torches on the front or something, and then the auto build is down there too, and the default thing that it gives you is the sled with the lights on it. So it makes sense to go around in that. I just always found that every time I built a sled or something with momentum, I would hit something I couldn't see and fall over, or hit a wall, or fall down a trench, or whatever, and I just couldn't see it. So after a while, I was like, no, this just sucks. It's just dark.
See, it's funny, man, because I love the depths because it allows me to conquer a space that seems unconquerable initially, and that's what I love.
Same.
In all open world games, it's going into the unknown and slowly but surely becoming a master of that space. And I never uncovered all of the depths. There's still so much down there that I have not seen.
I love that all the amiibo costumes from Breath of the Wild are down there.
Is that right?
Absolutely effing awesome. You can just like just save yourself £70 and go find the Ocarina of Time set down there.
But like I have not seen everything down there, but I've conquered enough in terms of the missions that required me to get from place to place that I felt like I was uncovering something on the journey. It felt like I was making progress. Mm. I was lighting up this area. I was getting from one lamp to the other, and I was getting from one forge to the other, and I was making like connections. I was kind of death stranding.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Give me that exact same feeling.
Depth Stranding.
Absolutely. And it was a solid sense of progression. It was like more rewarding than the actual rewards on the surface. And I thankfully got there quite early to where the rewards were stacking up and the sense of progression was there. You know, hunting down the Yiga clan was excellent. And then that gave me the ultimate reward of finding out where Ganon is and knowing that he's deep under the castle. So one of the first things I did when I got out of that depth stint was go under the castle and see if I could get to Ganon. And I was able to. I was able to get right just before, right up until the point where you fight him and you're fighting his minions, you know, and you're taking on his army, I think they call it.
Yeah, the demon army. Yeah.
And I managed to kill the demon army, but because I hadn't finished all the temples, that's when one of the temple bosses that I hadn't seen dropped down and just killed me instantly. And it was just so exciting that I managed to have this, you know, 5-6 maybe even more hour stint of going into the depths, finding all of this stuff, accumulating this knowledge, having a sense that I've conquered this space at least as much as I needed to, and then taking that knowledge to the surface and, you know, actioning it by going down to try to find Ganon. It was just, it was 5-star stuff.
That's the thing. I mean, I'm talking about something that I've spent 100 hours on as a game. I've had those experiences too. It was just that over time, the bad parts outweighed the good parts. Like, because I've done that, obviously minus the specifics of you finding Ganon, but that idea of conquering the space, that's by far the best thing about it. And that's what I got out of it when I first went down there. It was just that idea of like, I know where I want to be. I've made my map markers. I've got my lights ready. I've built some stuff. Let's do it. I fell down a ravine, or I've like tipped over, or there's a wall there, and like, oh, I can see where I want to be. I can see the tree thing. But like, oh, Link just fell now, and I'm inside something that I can't see. And that was my last bright bloom seed, so now I'm just stuck down here. It was just that whole thing where, like I said, the bottom kind of fell out of it a little bit. But when it works, it's beautiful. It's brilliant. Just for me, it didn't work consistently.
I wonder how much, again, that's resource dependent, because I was down in the depths so much, did all of that stuff. And by the end of the game, I still had 600 bright bloom seeds.
Yeah, but you spent like, what was it, like 20, 30 hours in the opening bit though?
That's what I mean. You know, I spent like 25 hours in the opening bit, getting to the first temple, going into all the caves, going down all the wells and all of that stuff. So I was always well stocked up throughout the game, but this is what I mean. You know, if you didn't do that, you'd have a terrible time in the depths probably, because like you said, you'd be running out of bright bloom seeds. You'd have to be more precious over how you use them. You'd have to feel your way around there a little bit more, and it would be nightmarish. Whereas I was down there and I was, like I said, I was forging my path. I was shooting out these bright bloom seeds everywhere. I had the armor that glowed as well, which gave me a little bit of a...
Which looks insane,
glowing radius. It absolutely does. And then later on, I was doing what you mentioned, building these machines that had lights on them to illuminate as I went. So I never got those frustrating moments that you did, where you're like, oh, I've fallen into this place. I thankfully never experienced that, which is...
I always chose to go down there, but it was just one of those things. Yeah, it was just that thing of like not feeling like any of the solutions that you had to the darkness in terms of the light would actually stretch far enough to have any utility to it in terms of movement. Like, unless I crawl through, like obviously it's running, but I mean crawl speed-wise through that place, I'm always going to fall down somewhere. I'm always going to hit some sort of roadblock. I'm always going to get arrowed from some dude off the screen or whatever. Like, I just didn't have a whole lot of fun down there overall, but there were parts where I got it. I totally got what they were going for, and there were bits that worked, but it was just one of those things with the order of how I did it, where it was just like, we need to find Ganon, go back down in the depths, go do all this stuff that you could have done 70 hours ago, which we didn't even remotely push you towards. And now it becomes super resource heavy, and now it all falls apart.
You're going to disagree with this because you just said it there, but I will disagree with the idea that they don't push you down there. I think one of the first missions you get in Lookout Landing is to talk to that person who wants you to go down to the depths.
Yeah,
and then if you talk to them again, that's when you get the mission to go down and get the auto builder. If you're talking to those people, I do think the game pushes you down there enough. Mm. And even when you're in the sky, you're always unlocking those chests that, you know, put an X on a point down in the depths to say, like, the stuff down there. There were enough discrete missions for me and enough other subtler indicators to go down there that I always felt I was going down with purpose. I never went into the depths to just see what I would find.
Right.
It was going down to do a mission, or it was going down to travel to one of those X's on the maps those to see X's, what was there.
All the amiibo costumes, by the way. If you ever want to pick them up, that's the cool old tunics.
Is that right?
For the most part, yeah. You get all the different sets from the entire 35 years of Zelda, even the original one made like modern. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was just one of those things where like, yeah, I agree the first mission is there and you have to follow the statues. It was, even that wasn't that fun. Just sort of like, oh, the statues pointing that way. But they go on for, it's like 50 of them. So did that for ages. Go back up, tell Robbie that you've done it and like you found whatever that first thing is that you find. I didn't feel a pull after that. Because I'm trying to find Zelda. I'm going to go do the temples. I'm going to go do the things that would like do the main thread. Please check out the What Culture Gaming's podcast we did on gaming habits for exactly why we're like this. But yeah, I didn't feel much of a pull too then until, like I said, 70 hours later, the game's like, no, you actually need to go find something. And it's Neil in a haystack and the haystack's in the dark. Mm. So go find it. That was the bit that like sort of fell apart for me. Let's talk about sages and Ganon stuff. I was going to talk about Ganon before. Thoughts on Ganon? I don't think you're a huge fan.
I like Ganon enough.
He's a good lad.
I wish he spent more time in his skeletal form.
No!
I'm a little bit upset that we only got the opening and then a tiny bit of the ending. It's not the worst.
What do you mean?
One. The skeleton Ganon is so cool. He's a little scary guy. He's menacing.
It was like Voldemort or something.
I actually kind of was upset when you went down for the final battle and he immediately turned into his Ganondorf self that you'd seen in the cutscenes.
That's incredible.
Sure, I'm sure Zelda fans, lifelong Zelda fans, were absolutely loving that moment. I wanted something a little bit spookier, and I didn't get it, Scott Tilford. But I think he's good. Like I said, his role in the cutscenes from the tears themselves are amazing. I like his role within that story. Mm. I kind of have an issue where I almost wish I was playing that story instead of this one.
I'd probably back that.
You know what I mean? Because I wanted more of Ganon's presence in the actual game world, and I understand why he's not. He's kind of down there, he's regaining his strength, and he does throw up phantom Ganons that you can fight.
I like them,
but I wish his presence was felt a little bit more. Obviously,
same with the Zonai and Rauru and everything, to be honest. Like the Zonai, you see like one throne room where there's more than two of them.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's Rauru and the Queen.
Yeah, 100%. And I liked him, and I liked them, and I just wish they played a little bit more prominence in the story. But then again, like I said before, would I have even enjoyed that? Because I don't play this game for the story. But as a main villain, I would have liked for his beef with Link to be more pronounced. Because I would rather play the flashbacks because that was personal, you know?
Yes.
That beef was personal. It had stakes, whereas Link, it kind of feels like a footnote to that story when
that's
it comes
kinda
in. He kills him.
That's like the whole point, though. That's like their monomyth framing.
Right.
Because it's like you're talking about like a war between the ultimate demonic, like evil hell thing and the ultimate light. Like, and Link is the unassuming hero who's just thrown in the middle of that, who like ends up saving the day. Like, Link is not on Ganon's radar. Like,
right,
for the vast majority. Like, it's the Luke Skywalker Palpatine thing. Like, that's why I love the hyper evil Ganon in this, the big red hair, and he's huge, and he's got a samurai sword, like a katana. He just looked like an absolute tank, and I was just like, this is great. If you're going to do an evil AF character who's going to cackle and be maniacal and everything, it was like perfect. But we are talking about a very threadbare character. Like, they've barely ever fleshed out his motivations or anything. Like, you get a bit more in this, but it's still just, I want ultimate power, I want to take over, like, yeah.
I loved the fight with him. I thought that like three-stage fight was incredible. You know, the first one-on-one was really cool. Finally being able to use the Master Sword and take on this guy. Then when he splits into the various versions of himself and you're kind of juggling all of that. One of my favorite moments of the entire year is when you get into the second phase with him and his health bar goes off the screen.
Yeah.
I thought that was so fun and so funny and playful. And it's like, yeah, I want to take this guy down. He's so powerful.
Yeah, man.
And now it's personal between me and him. And then that obviously escalates even further to him turning into a dragon, which made for this spectacular set piece. I loved all of that stuff. I thought the game ended so strong.
That bit with the dragons at the very end was very glitchy for me. Just sort of like Link being stuck in his like skydive animation as he rubs around Ganon trying to do stuff. And I was like, and then the whole thing they have to program with Zelda catching you anyway. Like I would like rub around Ganon and then ping off to the side. And then the momentum of that movement would like lock in place again. And then Zelda would catch me so I could do it again. That was one of those things where I loved the music and what they were going for, but the game did not present that very well, but that might have been an early review thing.
That is such a shame because
it was funny, man.
I had one moment where I fell through his dragon body when I shouldn't. I just clipped through.
Yep.
But thankfully, that was just once. in the entirety of the fight, and everything else was pretty smooth, and the scale was big, and it worked as intended. Like you said, the music's there swelling. Yeah. The escalation of the fight is crazy. Seeing Zelda's dragon fight Ganon's dragon, and he's so big in his dragon form, and she seems so small, even though she seemed huge previously. It nailed it. Zelda turning back into a person and then falling from the sky, and you have to skydive and grab her.
Yeah.
It was just the perfect end to the game, I thought. It was even more memorable than Breath of the Wild, which I also enjoyed.
Ooh, yeah. I think I prefer Breath of the Wild because I like the fact that it comes down to one arrow shot. Like, you're in midair, you've created your own updraft, and then the music like crescendos and goes into super slow-mo as you nail that one final shot that saves the day. I think I'm always going to love that one-shot thing. But they're both great. Sage stuff is interesting. Like, you get a power per Sage. They do the same, ostensibly the same cutscene every single time.
So annoying,
by the way. Yeah, the same dialogue, the same, like, framing, the same, like, you know, this is your ancestor, they're really proud of you, whatever. It is the same thing all four times, and I get that's because they didn't know what temple people were going to do first, even though the majority seem to have done the Rito temple first in the Northwest. That was a bit disappointing that it was where it was like Breath of the Wild to a fault, where I was like, this is just the same thing over and over and over again, because we did that in Breath of the Wild, and it was a complaint 6 years ago.
I thought the sages were kind of underutilized and a little bit underbaked for me, especially the powers that you get from them.
They're weird.
I like the one from, I think it's Rio Village, where you get the draft and the gust of wind that allows you to glide a little bit further.
Yep.
But the rest, like, I never used. Like, I used the lightning when I had to.
Oh, I used them all the time. I thought, really? I was, like, comboing them and everything.
What?
Like, yeah, I think, like, I mean, you've got, like, because I would set, I forget the name of the specific sages, but you've got the lightning sage, so I would set her off, and that slowly makes an increasingly big area of effect. Then I would tap into the boulder guy and fire him off, because that's a ranged attack. And then as that, like, lightning's getting bigger, I would, like, channel that at whatever little cluster of enemies are there.
Right.
The only one I wasn't using in combat was Rito's, because that's more of a maneuverability thing. But then even Sidon, I mean, you have, like, if you put his shield on, you can absorb one hit, so it's always good to have that active. Like, I think they work pretty well. It's just that, like, there was more you could have done in terms of leveling them up and stuff.
I found it cumbersome, man. Right. Like, I found having to go up to each of the sages,
running after them to be like, please, can I do your thing?
Running after them, pressing the button, then pressing it again to utilize their power. It funnily enough, this is the one thing that broke for me more often than it worked. There were so many points, right? There were so many points where I just defeated a boss. And then I went to pick up the components on the ground. And because the pickup button is the same button that you use to activate the powers. As the blow it away from me button. And then I had to watch as I pressed the button thinking I was going to pick it up. And watching a gust of wind come in and blow it off a ledge. I was like, why have you done this to me? The game's sick sense of humor is tooled on me here. In more seriousness, though,
that's a totally valid thing, though. I had that too.
Yeah, well, it is, right? But in terms of utilizing them in combat, I found it just as cumbersome. Like, they were always kind of grouped together, so I was running in between them, having to move the camera so I could look at one, and then, like I said, hit the button. And by the time I'd done that, I probably could have defeated the enemy regardless.
Right.
I will say that I didn't get the boulder guy until the very, very end of the game. Like, by that point, I was moving on to the end game stuff and I wasn't doing any more exploring. Mm. So I utilized him, but he wasn't a constant companion in the same way.
I send him into enemy encampments.
Oh, see, I would have loved to have done that a little bit more, but I got him so late that I just didn't manage to use him. And they were, to me, more of an afterthought than anything else. I thought, I've already got this great selection of powers. Why almost dilute that in a little way? Especially because I think, you know...
Oh, we should talk about the powers. I think that's such a cop-out.
What?
That, the wheel that they give you, three... There's an amiibo slot, there's a map slot, and there's a camera slot.
Like, yes.
Showing that as a blank power wheel at the beginning is almost insulting to what they give you later on.
That's brutal, that.
I honestly think that's a cop-out.
What?
Yeah.
But, man.
An amiibo, dedicated amiibo slot. And a map. There's a map button. You don't need another thing on the wheel.
I agree.
Jesus.
It is a use to me. But I think the powers that you get, you know, the fuse ability, you know, the ability to jump up.
No, they're great.
Yeah.
I just mean the wheel is a cop-out. The way that they tease, they're going to have all these powers coming, guys. And they don't. They fill in super fast because it's like, they're just menu options.
I kind of would have preferred the sage powers to go on there. Be able to activate them that way. I will agree with that, yeah. Because
going into your inventory to spawn or despawn them is absolute insanity.
Yeah,
like if you don't want them to run around with you, you have to like manually turn them off.
I think because like you said, the game doesn't know when you're going to go to the temples, so you can spend, if you wanted to, so much of the game without them. I think that's why they're not a more integrated part of your moveset. But yeah, I just kind of found them as an afterthought in a way. And to be honest, I didn't really love the temples themselves. I think I like three out of five. So to be fair, I like more than I thought.
Okay.
But some I was just kind of frustrated with that they didn't utilize more unique mechanics. The one in is it the Gerudo Desert where you're like, kind of like you're going down below and you're using a lot of reflections and stuff. It was okay.
That's hilarious. That was one of my favorites, the fire one, but I really like that lightning one. I love the boss in the ceiling as well.
The bosses to them all I think are excellent. It's just like the actual puzzles themselves. The one that I loved was the water temple. I thought that was like sick. I thought the one in Rito Village was all right, but
I like that one, bouncing off all the pirate ships and everything.
I just had high expectations to them because people were saying like the classic Zelda dungeons, and they're way better than the ones
I was gonna say
Breath
it's in that direction
Wild.
But
yeah, absolutely, but I found they were over quite quick, and some of them were really good, but they weren't these kind of culminating moments that really challenged everything that you would acquire to that point. It was just like a cool little area, I suppose.
It's definitely their whole thing, which Breath of the Wild had, where the entire world is the dungeon. Like the way we just described everything with the depths, that's the mentality that you would have had in a previous dungeon in an older Zelda game. Because like they were the showpiece things in those older games. Like I'm going back through Minish Cap at the minute, and those dungeons are like beautifully made, like lots of different layers to them, and you're falling through to access different parts of them and everything. I think that they've kind of inverted all that stuff. In New Zelda, they seem to have inverted that. The mentality that you would have is more about the open world. But I like the temples a lot. I thought they were more reminiscent of old school Zelda, but not fully, but enough. Like, I was like, enough, considering the rest of the game is so kind of like cerebral anyway, that like you have to have a certain mentality in terms of solving the puzzles, like that water one. Like I flew parts of the puzzle around the objects around to solve that puzzle.
Nice.
In a way that to this day I have no idea what I was supposed to do. I just attached a bunch of balloons to a thing and flew it to where it was supposed to go, and which was great. But like stuff like that where I was like, this is enough. Like for me,
that's absolutely like it's enough. I don't think any of them were really outright bad. A few of them were frustrating for me personally, but they just, I was expecting a little bit more from them, especially because that was kind of one of the only big criticisms that I think most people could agree on with Breath of the Wild.
Possibly,
and there was certainly improvement here, but I thought they would be bigger. I thought I would come out of the game pointing towards them as some of my favorite moments within the game, and I prefer the depths way more. I prefer the Sky Islands way more, even though some of them were great, like I mentioned with them, freeing the weather cloud from that one Sky Island towards the end. That was really good, just a little bit inconsistent.
I love the fire temple and I really like that lightning temple, but with that lightning one, I felt like I was breaking it because I had loads of my own mirrors.
Yeah.
So I was setting up loads of my own mirrors, and then I swear I unlocked something in the wrong order because I had to use Ascend to go up back through a part of the temple to get like back on track kind of thing. And I got into the boss area early as well. I went all the way up. Because I love the whole thing in this game where you sort of like tuck Link under like an outcrop and then use Ascent and go all the way up something huge, like an entire structure, a temple or something. I arrived in what is later the boss area.
It was
being like behind like a gig before it had started. And it was just like the two trees are there, but nothing's happening. And it's just like, it was kind of fun. Like a boundary break kind of thing.
I will say the bosses themselves are spectacular. Yeah. I thought they made the temples worthwhile. When I was fighting those, it felt like, okay, this is capping off a major moment in the game, and using the abilities of your companions in those instances made them worthwhile as well. It was just their implementation in the open world that I didn't vibe with, but when they were integral to the experience, it was good.
Who was your favorite boss?
My favorite boss, I think it was probably, even though I didn't love the temple, it was the big electric thing in the sky that you have to use the paraglider to get around and you're shooting it. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, man, I like that one in terms of just the visual. I love the stance that Link does if you aim in a skydive.
Yeah.
He's like pulling his legs are flailing and he's trying to like do the shot. In slow-mo, that thing's incredible. Like, I love that those bosses, I don't know if they are there beforehand, but loads of them double up in the depths. Like, I fought that flying Rito guy.
Really?
Down in the depths. Like, yeah, you can just find them again.
That's cool.
They're like a different version. It's like a more sort of like demonic, like a dark blue version, like a bonier kind of version. But yeah, it's just the same fight, but like it's in the depths. And I was like, that's kind of cool. But I don't know if they spawn because you've beaten their regular version or not.
Yeah, that could be.
I don't know if there's something out there in the lore, some pickup or something that really says what the hell the depths are. Because it's like, it mirrors Hyrule, like the plants or whatever are doubled up where the shrines and stuff are. But it's like, did Ganon, is this the old world? Like, what is this?
I love the implication, right? Mm. And you only get it towards the end where you go down into where Ganon is and you go into the copy of Hyrule Castle and you kind of see the previous mural about that timeline. Mm-hmm. To me, I have no idea if this is legitimate. I have no idea about the lore of Zelda.
Right.
But it gave me the impression that everything that's happened in the past kind of is just built on, and like another version of Hyrule exists underneath the version that we're on now that had its own history, that had its own hero versus villain story, and then that's been forgotten because it's so deep down that a whole new civilization, a mirror civilization, has built on top of it. And I love the implication that if you went even further than the depths, you would find yet another Hyrule castle with a mural about another Ganon.
Right, okay.
That has, you know, caused its own calamity down there. I just love that, the idea of civilizations building on top of each other. And I don't know how that fits with Zelda lore, but in my head, I could at least rationalize it as that explains why this story is repeating, because it's literally built on top of the previous versions of those. It's hard to get my head around.
They did a huge book called The Hyrule Historia where they tried to canonize the entire thing, even though they clearly never set out for it to be one giant story or anything. The nearest thing until that point was just the idea that Zelda was like a fairy tale being told around a campfire, and whoever's telling it, I'm talking like metaphorically, whoever's telling it, like, you know, that's why Wind Waker looks cartoony, because maybe a child's telling it.
Yep.
Or Twilight Princess is more hard, like more a harsh art style, because it's an adult telling it or something. That always felt like enough for me. I never needed it to have actual lore. They did do the Hyrule Historia, though, where they talked about different timeline resets and like Toon Link versus regular Link and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Breath of the Wild, as far as I know, was the reboot after all that stuff was tied together.
Okay.
But there are callbacks in Breath of the Wild to the other games. Like, there are sets of islands that are named after NPCs and different characters and stuff. But I love your idea of, like, one of them, like, the whole new Zelda is built on old Zelda. That's kind
of fun. Yeah, yeah. They can almost all exist, and that everything happened. It's just that, like, time has moved on, people have forgotten. It's kind of like the ages in Dark Souls, you know
right.
what I mean? Like, what age of fire will come in the age of dark? They will go back to the age of fire, and we'll repeat the same mistakes. We'll have kind of like mirrored versions of these same conflicts play out with slight differences. I thought that was cool. It reminded me of is it the Forgotten City or whatever it's called? That indie game that came out a few years ago.
Yeah, Forgotten City. I thought you meant the Forgotten City in Dark Souls.
But that has a similar thing of civilizations being built on top of each other and, you know, people forgetting what's literally right underneath them. And I just think that's neat if it's true, but I could be clutching at straws there.
I think the fact that they've stimulated that as a takeaway is great. Like, that's even more rewarding than like the specifics. So they don't give you specifics. I think that's enough to kind of run with.
I will say, Scott, all the way through this game, for as much as I loved a lot of the curated stuff, so many moments like that fill my personal highlight reel. You know, we were talking about the bosses there, which were all great. But honestly, my favorite fight in the game was finally taking on a Gleok, I think called. Yeah. And, you know,
triple-headed dragons.
Beating them. And that was a great fight. The different stages of that fight were epic. And I felt like I'd accomplished something.
Did you find where they're from?
I didn't find where they're from. I have not.
There's a Gleok den.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
I mean, it's stupidly hard.
Oh, I'm assuming.
You have to go in there to get one part of one of the costumes. Maybe it's a Wind Waker costume or something. But yeah, there's a Gleok den in the depths.
Well, this is it. Like, there's still so much of the game I've yet to uncover because I've only beaten one in a final. That took me ages.
Right.
And I only beat it because I had the defenses against electricity that allowed me to. But like, there's the fire ones that I haven't touched yet because they just absolutely decimate me even when I get close.
Did you find the multi-headed one as well? Sorry, they're all multi-headed, but the multi-elemental one.
I found it, but I'm scared to fight it.
Because I beat the lightning one by freezing it all of its heads over and over again so that it falls down. And I just wailed on it. I actually beat that not to brag, but that was quite straightforward.
Right.
Only because I elemental killed it.
Yeah.
And then I've like four other ones and I don't have the exact opposite element and I just get flattened.
Yeah.
So it's like I died to the one that has the different elemental heads and I died in an instant in the Gleok Den.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, there's that. The thing that was my thing with the rewards though, because I beat it, they give you a specific scale and I didn't know what to do with it. And I was like, I think you can build some specific armor from it. I actually don't think you can, but I was like, what do I do with this thing that I got?
I think like so many of the monster drops, you just attach it to a weapon and it makes it really strong. Like I will admit it made my weapon really strong and I loved that, you know, reward from it, but it didn't make me want to go down and kill the rest, especially because I was so close to the end of the game that I didn't need more resources to attach to weapons because I had a lot of powerful ones.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was still, in and of itself, as an event, memorable.
Yeah, man, totally. I mean, the stuff like that, it's like, because they have so many, like, hidden, you know, clothing dye shops and random armor that you can find, and they're tapping into that Dark Souls kind of boss battle, the size of that boss that you can just find out in the open world. And it's almost a little bit Monster Hunter-y as well. Like, you're getting a scale from this thing. They had it in Breath of the Wild where you could get scales from the dragons if you were like in their air current or whatever.
Yeah.
I kind of hope they would do something more with that, like get some really like badass like Thunder Zonai armor. You can get Zonai armor, but it's not elemental. But yeah, overall, like a hell of a game. I do find my own brain arguing with myself when it comes to this, what I want to prioritize when someone says like, oh, is it great? What sticks with you? Like after like months of finishing it, and I'm over 100, I've finished it. I've done everything, like 100 plus hours, built the house and everything. Did you build like Link's house?
I started to, then realized I would never go back. So I was like, this is a waste of my money.
Oh, that I treat that as his retirement house. Cause nice. I was like, I did the same thing in Breath of the Wild. Like when you, I forget what you call that village now, it begins with an M. But that's the village that is like fully formed now, but you help build that village in Breath of the Wild. And so it made sense in lore that like Link would go back there and settle down because you already have a house with Zelda. But like, I guess she's off being a dragon. So like, I need to do something else. I built like him with like a little hot tub thing on the roof. Ooh. And I was just like, this is where he is now. My time is done. He'll be there until I need him again. But yeah, things like that. There's a lot of different bits and bobs that you could just miss. Or like spend time doing, but closing thoughts.
You know, we've been somewhat negative on the game here, but it's all out of love, and you know, we're being negative about a game that we both really enjoy and rate incredibly high.
I'm entirely talking about the things that stopped it being 5 stars, but the bottom is 4.5 stars.
Exactly, man. It's like a testament to its quality that we can go in this deep on all of this stuff and still barely scratch the surface. I love how ambitious the game is. It's incredibly memorable. I think it's noteworthy for me personally that the most memorable aspects of the game are the aspects that are least like Breath of the Wild. It's the new stuff, it's the deaths, it's the Sky Islands, it's the new powers, and it's the new enemies. You know what I mean? Everything else was really good, but I almost wish I could have a full game of that curated depths content, that curated Sky Island content.
Massive same for the Sky
Island.
Yeah, no, I massively backed that. Every time I went back up to the Sky Islands, I was like, this is the best stuff. It's the right mix of exploration, reward, visual reward. Some of the vistas, like, we haven't really talked about the Switch hardware side of it. I'm not going to spend too long on it, but I thought, I mean, obviously there's a lot of stuff to do with jagged shadows and like the way that it does lighting and bits and pieces about the frame rate. But for me, when it landed, when the sun was going down and you got sunset in Hyrule, it was beautiful. When it was sunrise in Hyrule, it was beautiful. And when the first time I made a makeshift platform with a set of fans and took off literally through the clouds, stuck with me forever. Like, we opened the review on it because I was like, this is absolutely gorgeous. So it's like that art style can absolutely soar, like, sometimes. Most of the time for me personally, I think a lot of people, comparing it to like bigger games and stuff, but it's still good for me.
Gorgeous, man. Like, I know I've had my issues with the technical side of things and I stand by that, but the sunsets, that's what I'm referring to. Those sunsets are incredible. And I just kind of, I want to see the next Zelda on like way better hardware.
This has to be the last one on Switch.
Yeah. So I'm going to have those moments all of the time. I think, you know, like I said, great game, ambitious game. It's not going to be my game of the year, but if it's yours or if it's someone else's, I can totally see why it would be, you know, because it's got so much in there to latch onto. And if you latch onto the majority of it, it's just going to be, you're going to be, you know, playing it forever and ever and ever and
ever. It feels like it's one of those games, one of those sequels that is so good, it just obliterates the original, but only if you haven't played the original. Like, if you come in on Tears of the Kingdom, you do not need to play Breath of the Wild. I would say.
Is that right? Well,
I would say.
This is the thing as well. I think it's important to note right at the very end that I've mentioned this to you, Scott Tailford, privately outside of this podcast recording, that so much of my love for Breath of the Wild was its context. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was the first time I'd ever played a Zelda game. It was the first open world game to properly do things its own way and to break off from the tropes of the time. It was so fresh. It was so new. And it was doubly new to me because I never experienced this world before. Mm. Now, Breath of the Wild has influenced so many other games. It's so established. I've played other Zelda games. This was almost impossible to recapture. It's almost impossible to recapture that magic with a straight sequel like this. So I think it's worth knowing that, because if I'd played this first, like you said, if this was my first Zelda game, I'd have probably it would have definitely, in fact, given me the experience that I had with Breath of the Wild. But I'll never recapture that.
That's the thing. I think context is everything. And like the that was my thing with Breath of the Wild. It was like, it's cheesy, but it literally was a breath of fresh air in that year. That was the year of Battlefront 2, For Honor, Shadow of War. Like, that was the year where microtransactions were king, itemized open worlds were everywhere, like Ubisoft style. And it was just Nintendo going like, no, table swipe all that away and just get back to the pure exploration. That's why I mentioned Serenity and Tranquility before. Tears of the Kingdom, though, I think, to that regard, reuses too much stuff. They could have gone more towards that, making it feel more distinct. I'm not saying it feels like the most deluxe DLC pack of all time, but I get the argument that it is. I get the people who, I mean, it's obviously a reductive argument to make, but I get where people are coming from for that, just because everything from the sound effects to the menu to the progression is the same.
That's it. I mean, again, you know, another thing about the context in which I play this game, I hadn't touched Breath of the Wild in years. So even a lot of the reused areas, I've said this before, but they were still fresh to me because I couldn't fully remember them. But I would agree that if you were someone who played Breath of the Wild right up until the release of Tears of the Kingdom, you did all the DLC, maybe went through it a few times, fully explored it, it would feel less special, I think, than if you had at least a little bit of a break like I
totally
did,
I think
hadn't played one at all.
Yeah, I think as well, if you're someone who hasn't played Breath of the Wild since 2017 and you have now played Tears of the Kingdom, if you fire up Breath of the Wild just for the absolute lulls of it, you will remark at how much is identical. Like, I think that is like a weird overseen thing where it benefits from the fact that it's been 6 years. But if you put them side by side, they're very, 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 very similar. Overall, though, a great game.
A good game, huh?
One of the best games of the year. This has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. Didn't do an intro, but I'll do an outro. I'm Scott Tailford. That's Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tailford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you throughout the week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.